Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast bonus episode. I am Ghost Joe, your host. On this episode, our buddy John Wright goes into detail about UFO UAP whistleblower Luis Elizondo. Luis, being one of the most vocal of them all, has spoken at congressional hearings about his observations and has even written a book about it titled Imminent, Inside the Pentagon's Hunt for UFOs. But before John gets into his awesome segment, let's talk about exactly what a whistleblower is. So imagine discovering something so extraordinary, so world-altering, that you feel compelled to reveal it to the public despite the risks. That's the life of a UFO whistleblower. Individuals who step forward to expose what they believe to be the evidence of extraterrestrial encounters and government cover-ups. So what exactly is a UFO whistleblower? A UFO whistleblower is someone who claims to have insider knowledge or first-hand experience related to unidentified flying objects and the alleged secrecy surrounding them. These individuals often work within the government or military organizations and feel a moral obligation to share their knowledge with the public. Let's explore some of the most notable UFO whistleblowers. So first up, we got Bob Lazar. One of the most famous names in the UFO community, Bob Lazar claimed to have worked on reverse engineering alien technology at a secretive site known as S4 near Area 51. His story, although controversial, has captivated audiences for decades and inspired numerous documentaries. Next up, we have David Grush, a former United States Air Force officer and intelligence official. Grush has made headlines with his allegations of a secret program dedicated to recovering and studying non-human spacecraft. He has testified before Congress, claiming that the U.S. government is hiding evidence of extraterrestrial encounters. Next up, we have Paul Heller, the former Canadian Minister of National Defense. Heller has publicly stated that governments worldwide are aware of extraterrestrial beings and have been in contact with them. His bold claims have made him a prominent figure in the UFO disclosure movement. And then lastly, we have Philip J. Corso, a former U.S. Army officer. Corso claimed in his book, The Day After Roswell, that he was involved in the recovery of alien technology from the Roswell crash and that this technology was subsequently used to advance human technology. These whistleblowers have brought attention to the intriguing and often mysterious world of UFOs, sparking debates, investigations, and a growing demand for government transparency. While their claims remain subject to scrutiny, they have undeniably played a significant role in the shaping the conversation around the possibility of extraterrestrial life. So, now that I got you guys a little bit warmed up, now let's get you into the right headspace with John Wright. Take it away, John!
Good evening. You are entering a dimension where up is down, good is evil, and day is night. You've just made a wrong turn into the right headspace.
Thanks, Joe. Today's segment is about Lou Elizondo. The information that I'm using for this segment was pulled from a couple different websites. One of them is LouElizondoOfficial.com, Wikipedia, and also the Black Vault, which is awesome when you're trying to find different types of documents that you can get through the FOIA process. I don't know how he does it, but John Greenwald does an outstanding job of pulling all this information and getting all these copies and then digitizing this stuff and getting it online. So kudos to him and everything that he does with that program. Now, as far as Lou is concerned, when you go online and you start to look, there are some things that you're going to definitely notice are not apparent. A lot of dates do not show up, like they don't give a date of birth, all that stuff. But you're able to find out little bits and pieces of information as we go. One of the things that it points out is his dad was originally from Cuba, his mom from the United States, and he was raised in Florida. In regards to his dad was actually supposed to take part in the Bay of Pigs invasion. And because it was something that was kind of canceled or abandoned at the last moment. His father was, as a result, jailed and spent time in prison because of his part in the failed invasion. One of the things that it mentions on Lou's site is how this kind of impacted him and was an inspiration for him and why he loved his country and in part why he took some interest in the military. While he was born and raised in Florida, he would eventually attend the University of Miami. As you go through and you dig for more information, it does talk about that he had a double major, microbiology and immunology, and he had several minors. One of them included mathematics, the other chemistry. So if these things are all true and it doesn't give you like a graduation date or when he finished those degrees, but if it's all true, what does that tell you about this guy? That tells you that this dude is super, super intelligent. After completing his stint at the University of Miami, he enlists in the Army. Now, it says originally because of the Army's interest in microbiology and diseases. So if you take a look at it, this dude is he's a perfect fit for this job. Why? Because that's what he winds up specializing in. Now, neither site mentions dates of, like I said before, of birth, does not mention when he graduated from the University of Miami, does not mention specifically his degrees, nor does it mention when he actually enters into military service. So all these things kind of like you got to go through, take a look at it and kind of deduct based off of what sort of little information they do give you about those things. One of the few dates that is mentioned in his bio is 1998, and it says during that time, he was recruited into the U.S. intelligence program as a civilian intelligence officer. So that brings up what exactly is a civilian intelligence officer. So what I was able to look up is based off of the website, person employed by an organization to collect or analyze information. The word officer is a working title. It is not a rank. It's typically used to identify non-commissioned personnel who serve as intelligence officers. In his bio, it mentions that he served in Latin America, the Caribbean, and the Middle East in 2001. He will serve in Afghanistan, and it goes on to say for several years. Again, does not mention any specifics. In regards to dates, again, the only thing I can find is 2003, and it says that in 2003, he would return to Washington, D.C. Now, I don't know who wrote like his bio and all that stuff. I don't know what they mean by several years, but in my mind, two doesn't necessarily count as several, in my opinion. But you know what? Maybe that's just me being a little petty. Anyway. At the time, he will oversee counter-espionage and counter-terrorism investigations. Toward the end of his career, he will work for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, and you'll see all these acronyms and stuff like that that pop up. Typically, this is referred to as ODNI. His biography also mentions that he was the senior leader of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, the famous or now infamous ATIP. let's just pause for a second here. If you're like me, then the first time you ever heard that term was probably from the History Channel show Unidentified. Now, what was the show? The show, it focuses on like a couple different key events. It has some really key people, some big time names that you'll see in that are currently famous or big time. That remains to be seen. But it was a program that was produced by To the Stars Academy. What the hell is it? Tom DeLonge from Blink 182 was one of the people that was behind it, him and his production company. That program is now defunct, or that group is now defunct. Some of the key people in the program were Chris Mellon, former deputy secretary. you got Elizondo. And it tends to focus on like a couple different key events. One of the key events being the Nimitz incident in 2004, which was off Catalina Island, which is off the coast of Southern California near where San Diego is located. and where the western part of the U.S. Navy is located. The other one focuses on what they refer to as the Roosevelt incident, which if you look up online, you'll see a couple different dates. You'll see it listed as late 2014, and you'll also see it listed as early 2015, which takes place off the coast of Florida. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the Nimitz incident, this is the one that gave rise to the whole idea of the Tic Tac. Some people that are involved in it, you have Commander Dave Fravor, you got Alex Dietrich, and you got a few other people that are involved in this. All these guys were part of an exercise that took place in the Pacific Theater. They were, while doing this exercise, sent for what they call, quote unquote, real world tasking to verify a radar hit. As they get to the area where this radar hit takes place, they kind of fly around and they spot an object that was bubbling below the surface of the ocean. Next thing you know, this white object shoots up out of the water, flies between the two F-18s, and just like rapidly accelerates off into the distance. Ship radars will confirm altitude and speed, and the jets will spend time trying to track this object. In some cases, it would pop up in one spot, disappear, pop up in another spot. It would drop from high altitude to low altitude and do things that any vehicle that had a human being in it was not capable of doing because it would injure the person within it. They eventually have to change squads because the jets can only fly for so long, and then eventually get another group up there. And the only video is what they refer to as the Tic Tac, which shows the object for maybe about 1 or 2 or 3 seconds at the max before eventually you see it kind of like shoot off the screen. After the incident, all radar units, whether it be on the ship or on the planes, are collected and are not seen again, which gives rise to the whole idea of they're hiding something. The Roosevelt incident, again, late 2014, early 2015, was filmed off the coast of Florida, and this one will eventually give rise to what they call the Go Fast video. Pilots were able to record this small object, which appeared to be kind of skimming over the ocean and moving at high rates of speed. What's really funny is as you go through and you watch the video, you can hear these guys like, oh my God, look at that thing move and blah, blah, blah. There's like a whole bunch of stuff that goes with it. I can offer up my opinion on these videos, and there are a number of people that have been able to basically debunk the gimbal, debunk the Go Fast. But I'll say it this way. I'll leave it up to you. Go watch the videos, make your own conclusions, and that will save me a lot of time. So back to Elizondo and ATIP. Full transparency, I was hooked when this show first came out. It was one of those things, man. It like blew your mind. You watched the first episode and you were like, oh, wow, when's this next one coming on? It was one of the first shows that I ever recorded on DVR. And I found myself rewatching episodes in part because of the information, but also in part because Elizondo himself, he was such a charismatic guy. Here's this guy that's an insider. He came forward to let people know that this shit was real, right? You know what I mean? He put his career on the line, all this other stuff for the quote unquote greater good. The second season of the show, like I was like chomping at the bit, waiting for the second season. And the second season was just as good as the first. Promises of disclosure and more information and videos and all those things were made. And then what I should have is like a cut to SpongeBob 8 years later meme where they have like that guy with the crappy French accent do the voiceover and be like 8 years later with the bubbles in the background. It's now 2025 and nothing of note has been released. ATIP has been called into question, as well as Elizondo's role in ATIP. His association with the To the Stars Academy has ended. He's kind of moved on to bigger and better things. if I remember correctly, who knows, that may have changed by now. He was part of the Galileo project. the only thing to note to date is that he's now released his book, Imminent. I'm going to, again, pause for a second here to kind of, like, take a breath, find my center, maintain my calm. Because if I don't, I'm going to lose my shit. you might be sensing a little bit of negativity. If you are, then you are correct. So then the question is, why? In part because I believed the hype. I believed the New York Times article. I believed the show. I was addicted to the Twitter posts and all those things that went with it. So why the negativity? I'm mad. Why am I mad? I'm mad at myself. I consider myself a pretty intelligent guy. I consider myself a pretty good critical thinker. And all of that stuff went out the window. And I got hooked. And it was hook, line, sinker. I was pulled into this thing. And I think that's the main reason why I think I'm really upset with myself about. In any case, after coming forward, blowing the whistle, making promises, and becoming, you might as well call him like the UFO messiah, absolutely nothing has been revealed. initially, they portrayed the ATIP program as this $22 million funded UFO program. We now know that that $22 million was not granted to ATIP. It was actually granted to a totally different program called AUSAP. AUSAP is Advanced Aerospace Weapons Systems Application Program. This was the result of a government contract that was awarded to Robert Bigelow. Now, if you go through, you do your history, you can find these documents. And one of the things that you're going to find out is that Harry Reid was mixed in with this. I guess there's connections between him and Bigelow. Long story short, if I'm possible or capable of doing that kind of thing, the information comes out. Bigelow's the only one that bid on the program, and that's part of the reason why they got it. The whole idea was to explore future threats. How could they deal with those possible future threats? So they would have a group of scientists come together. And again, you can look up all the different UFO personalities that are involved with this, like Eric Davis, Hal Puthoff, and like the names just go on and on and on. And you can go through and you can look at the results of what went on. And one of the things that you can, if you want to, it's kind of up to you. I still haven't broken down and gone out and purchased the book. But a couple years ago, you had Skinwalkers at the Pentagon come out, written by a couple different guys, George Knapp and so on, and Lakatsky and all the people that were involved in the program. And instead of being focused on UFOs or some of this other stuff, you got like ghost hunts and all these different things and dino beavers and maybe I should make this like a future segment. The only thing is, I don't know if I have the strength to go all through this stuff. Anyway, back to ATIP. The claim is that Elizondo, he ran this $22 million secret UFO program, which I'm going to say is, it's a little bit of an over-exaggeration. Why? Because ATIP did not officially exist. The term ATIP is a nickname that was used by Senator Harry Reid in his letter requesting that the AUSAP program be granted SAP status. So SAP, SAP status, refers to Special Access Program. Now, if you take a look, there's a letter to William Lynn, Deputy Secretary of Defense. And one of the things that they point out in there is there is no mention of a program called ATIP. Right. So what winds up happening is in the process of trying to get this designation, rather than call it AUSAP, Reid will refer to it as ATIP. Now, what does SAP do? It grants what they refer to as classified status. Why would you want classified status? Because this is going to limit who was able to look at the information regarding the program. Now, as you go through and you look at, again, Black Vault, awesome job being able to get this information, store this information so everybody can freely look at it. Again, kudos, man. I don't know how this dude does it. But you can go on that website and you can find all of these letters. And you can go through and you can look at them for yourself. And what you're going to find is that the program was denied this designation in November of 2009. And a couple of years later will eventually be shut down. Now, the copy of Senator Reed's letter can be found, as well as notes from the meeting in which the program was not, or was not granted, or was denied that SAP status. So ATIP, as I said before, is a nickname for OSAP. Now, why this happened, why did Senator Reed call it ATIP as opposed to OSAP? I can't answer that question for you. And unfortunately, he's no longer around to answer that question for us. My understanding is that this was the nickname that was granted to OSAP and would eventually be hijacked by a small group of guys later on in the Pentagon. And that small group of guys was led by, you guessed it, Elizondo. He, along with some other people, were interested in the UFO topic. And what they would do is, on their free time, they would delve into certain cases because, again, they have that access because of their security clearances. We know that this is confirmed by spokesperson Chris Sherwood in a comment to what is referred to as The Intercept, in which he states that Elizondo had no responsibilities with regard to the ATIP program while he worked in OUSDI, which stands for the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. And he continues, up until the time he resigned. Now, if you go through and you take a look at this, some people might say, oh yeah, he's trying to cover it up, all this other stuff. If you go by what this guy's looking at, ATIP was the nickname of OSAP. If you go back and look at OSAP, one of the names that never shows up on the list in regard to OSAP is Lou Elizondo. Anyway, Elizondo would later on file a complaint with the Department of Defense Office of the Inspector General. He claims that he was the target of a coordinated campaign to discredit him for speaking out. He implies that the Pentagon was downplaying his role in an attempt to ruin his career. And again, you can find this on a couple different sites. You can find it in the emails or in the complaint that he had filed. Later on, Elizondo will ask Senator Reed to write a letter supporting the idea that he was the head of this classified / unclassified program, which Senator Reed does in April of 2021. What I would encourage you to do is go through, take a look at the letter yourself. And once you've done that, like, pause here, go look at it and come back. If you read the letter, in my opinion, it's kind of neutral, non-committal. It's not necessarily the glowing endorsement that you might expect for somebody who's the head of one of these programs. The letter, its purpose, are pretty debatable. There are other correspondence that will become part of Elizondo's attempt to kind of buoy his claim of running the program. Those come in the form of a series of emails from Elizondo to Neil Tipton. Well, to other people, and CCing Tipton in the process. Who's Neil Tipton? He was, I don't know if he still is. I got to go back and look it up. He was the director for Defense Intelligence Collection and Special Programs. These emails, again, can be found on the Black Vault. So you can go through, you can look these things up. The article is titled ATIP and the Pentagon, The Struggle Over UFO Program Files. This was published in April of 2024. Now, I know as you go through and you look at some of the stuff, one of the things that did pop up was some people were trying to figure out whether or not these emails are legit. So I'm just going to say, let's just assume they're legit, right? The big question that needs to be answered then is, Why were they sent? Again, I would encourage you to read the emails, go through, take a look, form your own conclusion based upon what you've read. Now, the first email is August 22nd, 2017, and it's to, and it's redacted, so it doesn't tell you specifically who this email was sent to. But in the process, he does mention, he does CC Tipton in the process. Now, I'm trying to pull these things up on my computer here, enlarge it a little bit so I can see it a little bit better. And it goes, greetings. I briefly spoke to Mr. Neil Tipton, CC'd above, about our collective efforts and the interest expressed by the front office. Upon your return, I recommend we meet with Mr. Tipton briefly in person. He is amicable for a discussion and is aware of redacted previous portfolio. Mr. Tipton is now the acting director, Defense Intelligence for Technical Collection and Special Programs. And then it skips down and then it says, Neil, as soon as blank redacted returns from leave, we will schedule a quick meeting. As promised, blank is our Navy counterpart. Very best, Lou. Again, I kind of go through and I look at these and you start going through and you're like, okay, now, why did this dude send this email? What's it about? Who's included? And, and again, I kind of look at all the stuff from my point of view. Maybe you look at it a little bit differently than I do. But the second one, this one goes out. It's August 25th. And Lou sends out this much more detailed email. And it's to Neil Tipton. And what I found was Tipton responds pretty quickly. And I apologize. I laugh at this stuff because I think it's hilarious. So here is the response. And again, I'm going to try and save time here, but here's the response that Tipton winds up sending to Lou. And a lot of, some of the stuff's crossed off and redacted. And anyway, it says, thanks, Lou. All good. Although at some point I need to know what this actually is. Thanks, Neil. For me, I look at that email and I read it and I'm like, okay, what's the feeling I get from this thing? It's kind of like, it's kind of like the guy contacts you and you're like humoring him. You're not like, you're not verifying, you're not confirming. He's just kind of like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, at some point, you got to tell me what it is. Yeah, it's fine. You sent me all these emails and you're talking about all this stuff. I have no clue what it is that you're talking about, right? So then we get to the third email, which is, again, it's from Elizondo, and it's sent to Tipton. And this is what Lou put. It goes, greetings, Neil. A couple of quick items for you. Number one, front office is aware that you are now a part of this endeavor, and they are happy with the decision. We plan on you meeting redacted next week. How does this Wednesday look for a 1-hour discussion? Three, lastly, blank is a friend of the program. I believe you may be speaking with blank tomorrow. And it starts blank, blank. Just thought you should know. And then we jump up to the response that comes from Neil. Thanks, Lou. I'm around next week, but then gone the week of the 25th on, and it says some stuff. For a specific date and time, just work with blank. I'm not allowed to muck around with my calendar, but I am in the building all day the 20th. Yep, have a discussion with blank tomorrow. Thanks, Neil. Okay, so one of the things I get is a lot of his responses to Elizondo are like very, I'm going to call them nonchalant. And this one, you kind of get the feel of like, here's my thing. If you were a guy who's going to become the head of like this secretive UFO government program, in my opinion, I think you'd probably have, I'm going to call it a little bit more interest, a little bit more urgency. You're not going to do something like, oh, I can't mess with my calendar, but you know what? If you stop by, I'll try to fit you in. if you're legit taking over a government program, you're going to be like, all right, dude, let's nail this down. We need a date. We need a time, all these things that go with it. So in all honesty, if it kind of feels like Tipton's humoring Elizondo. So that brings up the question of why the emails. Although I can't prove it, is it possible that this was a preemptive strike on the part of Elizondo to kind of create a paper trail? Something he would be able to access later on because of the unclassified status of A, the emails, B, the program. If this is in fact the case, we can infer he knew, predicted that his role for this program or his lack of a role would eventually become public knowledge. I circle back to, he's an intelligent guy. This is demonstrated by the multiple number of degrees, his work in counterintelligence. Is it possible he knew that these emails would assist him later on in bolstering his claims? Okay, so a couple other questions. Was ATIP a secret $22 million program? Based on all the information that we have available to us, the answer is no. OSAP was a $22 million program that was run by Bigelow and all the people that were involved with him. Elizondo's connections to OSAP are, I'm going to say, obscure and debatable at best. There's issues with the dates that he says he starts the program and that he had communications with these guys. And one of the things that I found even more damning is that when Lakatsky came out with the book, when George Knapp came out with the book, one of the people that they never talk about or one of the people that they never include in the book is Lou Elizondo, which always struck me as funny. Like if this dude was really involved with the program and his experience and his connections actually reach back that far, then why isn't he one of the co-authors of this book? Why isn't this dude part of it if he's the leader of that program? Okay, now, so if he wasn't the head of a $22 million program, why does he claim to be? I'm going to go back to what I think is probably the two greatest motivators for people throughout history. I'll ask this question of my students when we talk about Christopher Columbus. Why did guys like Columbus, Da Gama, all these other guys, why did they risk their lives to go out into uncharted seas and explore the world? And it always comes back to these two things, fame and fortune. Number one, fame. The UFO Twitterverse were and continue to be staunch supporters of Elizondo. Since 2017, there is no better known whistleblower, I would say, in history of ufology than Lou. If anyone dares to besmirch this guy, whether it be his intentions, his integrity, those people will be trolled, they will be insulted, and yes, some of them have been threatened. Some of his online supporters have gone so far as to refer to him as UFO Jesus. So I'm going to go with fame can be a really strong motivator. Number two, money. This is quite possibly an even stronger motivator and much better reason. Since 2017, Lou has appeared in Unidentified. And I know it's a little snarky, but I'm sure he didn't do it for free. My man was getting paid to do that show. He's written a book, which you can find. And again, I'll be honest, I'm probably not going to go out and spend $20 to get this book, but it's typically $20. You can get it off of his website. You can find it in a couple other places. Another thing that I was able to find is he does a series of speaking engagements. A good chunk of those are in conjunction with City Winery, and it's many locations throughout the United States. Prices will vary depending upon the location. Typically, it starts at about $35 a person and goes up to $55 a person. It all depends on like where you're going to be located. Do you want to be really close to the stage? Do you want to be a VIP? That kind of thing. Can I say definitively that money is the reason behind his actions? No. But if he was really trying to change the world, would he really be doing it for $20, $35, or $55 at a time? Probably not. In the end, I view him as just another snake oil salesman who make these great claims and always fail to live up to those claims or deliver the goods. The moral of this story is, be careful who you put on a pedestal. That's the end of today's segment, and hopefully this leaves you in the right headspace.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of my guests and contributors that help make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.